Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my definition. But it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings. More so than any other. And our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss with Grin the Bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. You're getting a couple of shows this week. This is the Week 7 preview. Our website, as always, mwcconnection.com. Facebook, you might see a video or some ugly guy with the Astros hat talking about something related to the Mountain West. That's me, Jeremy Moss. The other guy, Matt Kennerly, who is rooting on his Giants this Tuesday night.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm missing the ninth inning for this, just so everybody knows. It's a dedication to my craft.
Do you at least have a DVR process or something to watch the last inning?
Nah, I mean, I'm poor. I don't actually have cable. I just stream everything. So
I don't know. Sometimes there's a pause button. So, hey, you can put on. Well, I won't tell you it happened, but they're winning at this point. So hopefully that keeps on going. Force a game 5 versus the Cubbies. And hopefully we're right and we're not outdated already by the time this goes on out there. So. All right, so let's get down to business. If you missed our mid-season show, if you listened to it either Monday night or early Tuesday morning, I did go back and fix the audio. I'm not entirely sure why there's a skipping or weirdness sound, but that has been changed and fixed, so you probably have to re-download it or go to Blog Talk Radio directly and search our show. Let's just say, I'll give you a spoiler, Wyoming is the big winner. Is that safe to say?
They are off this week, so they get to enjoy their new spoils, courtesy of us.
Yes, courtesy of. Do we need to fax them something?
Maybe we can tweet at them and say, hey, we think you guys are doing a great job.
They'll take that. That's good. All right, so let's actually get to the games this week. We have full conference games. So who's on bye this week? We have 5 games going on?
Yeah, I believe it's Wyoming and
you think we'd know this. Utah State. So we got 5 games. So this show shouldn't be too long, but yet we'll probably still go the requisite or, 55 minutes or so. So let's start with Friday night. We have 1 game Friday night. It's the oil can. Is the official name the battle for the oil can?
I don't think it really matters. It's kind of a dumb trophy anyway.
Hey, don't say it's a dumb trophy because the conflict is a thing.
Okay, yeah, that's true, but in the grand scheme of things, and especially in the grand scheme of Mountain West rivalries, the oil can is kind of on the side.
You know what? What's your favorite Mountain West? Is it the Fremont? Besides the Fremont Cannon, what's your favorite trophy game?
It's probably Bridger's Rifle.
Not the Hawaiian Cowboy?
I'm a fan of firearms? Fan of trophies that require firearms. Yeah.
It's a good one. I want a side note. Fort Bridger is near where I live, sort of, kind of. If I drive a little ways past so if people know the area, if you're in Park City, Utah, you go about east to Evanston. It's right past Evanston, Wyoming on I-80. That's why I was asking when you drove to Nebraska, if you're going through 80.
Oh, yeah.
But there's this little Fort Bridger, I forgot what it's called, Bridger Classic or some one of those little type fairs they have around town. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's like middle of nowhere. Everybody's camping. my brother has like a catering business. So years ago, I would be sitting in Fort Bridger selling hamburgers, buffalo burgers, hamburgers, making cotton candy for like over Labor Day weekend for like 4 days and make a ton of dough. So that's my knowledge about Jim Bridger, Fort Bridger, so, and the Bridger's rifle. So I was pumped.
We are all richer for it.
Yeah, hope you, if you ever get a chance to go there, it's pretty cool. It's a basically it's a drive through area, but it's a if you're ever out camping and want to go to some kind of some interesting spots, it's not a bad spot to be because you saw
sure
how part of Utah
sure
was.
It'll be livelier than Bulldog Stadium this Friday night.
There's a potential Giants game that night, correct as well?
No, that series would wrap up on Thursday night. So
if it.
Unless they game play another extra inning game, then they might.
Oh, jeez. Postseason baseball is the longest thing ever.
No, I mean, they are going to have to compete with a lot of high school games around the area. So I imagine to some extent that's going to depress turnout a little bit. There's also the possibility of rain in the area on Friday night. And there is the, you know, near certainty of more bad football. So...
Okay, so this game, we'll get down to it. Now. Yeah, if you 8 p.m. Mountain Time, or 7 p.m. Pacific there. It's on CBS Sports Network, where the Aztecs seem to live the past couple of years. Hey, at least this game didn't get pushed for, was it Garth Brooks concert?
That is true.
There's a positive for you, Bulldogs. Sorry, trying to find something.
I think more people might be at the fair on Friday night than at the game.
Whew. All right, so the game itself. We have to talk about this game, apparently. Aztecs are a 17-point favorite.
Okay.
What do you want to see? Because I don't want to just say, oh, Aztecs win, because that's where we're going. Probably both going to say they're going to cover. Let's be a bit more positive on this side, because Pumphrey will run for yards. Christian Chapman probably will be pretty good throwing the ball. Rashard Penny will do all right. But let's go to the Fresno side, because that's where there's more interest for me in this game.
Okay, what? How about this? How about I try to construct the upset scenario before your very eyes?
Or
before
yes. Do it.
This is probably a fool's errand, but... and I'll probably write more about this when I have more time to write the game preview. But here's where I think... Here's what I think has to happen. You know, I've talked a lot off and on over the last few weeks that Chase and Virgil just needs to start getting off to better starts. Because when you look at his numbers just in first quarters throughout the season, he's been so impossibly bad that you think that his numbers are going to just have to come up at some point. Like his QB rating in first quarters in the six games he's played so far is still just like 72.
Yeah.
Let's and by comparison, just for the sake of comparison, Christian Chapman, his quarterback rating in the first quarter is 202.
And he's great gunslinger himself.
He's basically been the best quarterback in the conference in the first quarter. And Chase and Virgil has more or less been the worst. But what I would say...
And that includes the Tulsa game where he played pretty well the first quarter?
Well, he was not terribly efficient in the first half. But anyway, both the traditional numbers and a lot of the more advanced numbers for those of you who go to football study hall...
If you're not, you're a fool.
But they kind of bear it out. And what I'll say is that if San Diego State has a weakness, especially on defense, it's that they've been a little more vulnerable against the pass in the first and the third quarter. You know, because if you go to CFB stats and you break them, you know, you break down the pass defense by quarters, like on the whole, they're about as good as you expect them to be. Like they have eight interceptions on the year. They're only giving up 6.5 yards per attempt.
Yeah, they're 45th.
But if you go through it by quarter, here's where they rank in the conference. So passing defense in the first quarter, they're fourth. In the second quarter, they're first, and it's not even close. In the third quarter, they're eighth with regards to yards, and they're dead last by quarterback rating. And in the fourth quarter, they're the runaway number one. So I think if Fresno State's going to have a chance to pull an upset, they're going to have to lead with the pass early and often. And that runs the risk of seeing things go sideways very quickly. But I think that Chase and Virgil's going to have to connect on a lot of early throws in order for Fresno State to have a chance in this game. If he doesn't, it's probably going to get ugly very early. But that's what I think has to happen, because I don't think they're going to get a lot of ground on the running game. I think Dontell James is going to have another kind of really tough situation ahead of him. And, you know, like it or not, Virgil's probably going to have a lot of responsibility for carrying this team on Friday night.
Make some good points. Also, I'd like to say Aaron Peck needs to catch the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you could say some of that, you know, if you're looking at catch rates. I think they've been depressed somewhat by the fact that, you know, he's been throwing, you know, Virgil's been forced to throw it away a lot. But they still have to assign it to somebody like that. But you're right. You know, nobody among the team's top four pass catchers has any higher than a 58% catch rate. And Peck in particular has been pretty productive on first downs. But on the whole, he's left a little bit something to be desired. Like, he still struggles with drops every now and then. Some of that is his fault. Some of that probably isn't. You know, a lot of that has to do with, like, good pass coverage. But he's going to have to find a way at some point to get the better of guys like Malik Smith, you know, Trey Lomax, all those guys in that vaunted Aztec secondary that have been playing at a very high level more often than not.
So let me ask you this. About so with the like I said, with the Fresno State passing game, Virgil and all that stuff, I know you were trying to be positive, like you gave some very good points about where they could be good or at least take advantage, because when we saw the UNLV game, they have an okay running game, was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any confidence James could do I know the injuries are an issue with all the depth, but any chance a running game could do something to help out the passing game where the Aztecs at some points in the game have issues?
I'm not terribly confident, because I watched most of that UNLV game last week, and it's not hard to imagine that, you know, this game is going to go a lot the same way, where the running backs, you know, as talented as they are, you know, the Rebels had a hard time last week finding running lanes, and to me, I think James is going to be in that same situation where it's just going to be really hard for him to break out.
I don't see it's. I see this game getting ugly.
Yeah, that would not surprise me.
Because, well, Fresno State's rush defense is nowhere near as bad as San Jose State. It's not amazing, because when Donald Pumphrey played the Spartans, he averaged 9.9 yards per carry, nearly 7 versus UNLV, over 6 versus UNLV, Nevada, and Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time seeing this game. I'm taking the points. I don't care. I'm going 17 points. Give me that. And I'd probably take 24 points for the Aztecs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of right there with you. I think it'll probably be, end up being something like, what, 31-14, something like that, 38-14.
They're going to get 14 points, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, UNLV almost got there.
That's true. I'm just sorry messing with you. So let me ask you this. The big news, what would be bigger news in this town? Fresno State getting the win, or the news today about Steak and Shake going to Fresno?
Oh, definitely be Fresno State getting a win, especially against San Diego State. Can you imagine what it would be like for not only for Fresno State fans, but for Aztecs fans?
I just saw a lot of people freaking out over Steak and Shake.
Yeah, well, that's very exciting news.
Have you ever been to a Steak and Shake?
I have. I've been to the Midwest a couple times. And
so I get the, what do you think of it?
The milkshakes are better than the burgers. That's really all I like about.
That's what I thought too. I'm like, Steak and Shake and Steak Shack. I've been to both. I'm like, it's cheap food, obviously, because I'm looking at their website now, 25 items under $4.
Mm-hmm.
I was thoroughly unimpressed with everything but the milkshakes.
Really?
Like the burgers, and they're just cheap, crappy burgers, really, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, our listeners can let us know what side of this debate they're on, because we know that Jeremy's wrong about a few very substantial things.
I love shakes. I said burgers. You agreed with me. Come on. You said they're not very good.
But the milkshakes, though, that's really all that matters to me.
Yeah, of course. There's places like, not to go off on food stuff, but there's a few places that, like, is there Arctic Circle out in Fresno, California area?
Do
you know what that is? It's just a restaurant. It's like, I go there just for shakes. There's a local burger place that's not expensive, but it's not cheap. It's like $10. I'm like, fast food. You know what I mean? Not cheap, but not a lot. Get the shakes. There's a lot of good shake places around here. So it's like, I love a good shake. So if that's what they're good at, you go for it. Let me ask you this, because since we're on food topic and we only have 5 games this week, is there a five? Have you been to Five Guys before?
Well, of course I have.
I don't know if it's in California. I'm just asking. So there's always a debate. Five Guys are in and out.
Oh, definitely in and out.
You think so?
Yes.
It depends on the mood for me, because I like in and out, but with Five Guys, you can kind of make what you want almost.
If you could combine In-N-Out's burgers with Five Guys' fries, I think you'd have an unstoppable fast food.
Cajun fries, of course, right? Cajun?
No, but either one. Either that or the regular ones.
I prefer the Cajun. Sometimes they put too much spice on there and I get kind of annoyed, but that's a good combination there.
Yeah.
Don't tune into the baseball game if you want to know what's going on. I apologize. Oh,
don't tell me. Let's just move on to the next game.
It's not a loss, I'll tell you that. Next game, sorry. I'll be quiet. I just saw something on my screen. I'm like, okay. You might get to watch baseball in a moment. That's all I'll tell you when we're done here. New Mexico versus Air Force at the Cotton Bowl.
For some reason.
You heard me right. Out in good old Dallas, Texas, in the stadium that's literally falling apart. Question mark emoji, hand emoji thing, whatever. I don't know why I looked into it, because that's the best reason I could figure out. I think the legitimate reason, probably a little bit of cash going on. And then in Texas, and especially the Dallas area, there's quite a few armed forces, military bases within a couple hundred miles. Closer than that, but Austin's not too far. Like I just mentioned last week, Dallas, Houston. If you're in Oklahoma City or Southern Oklahoma, you're within driving range of seeing Air Force if you're in the from the academy. So Air Force is also a 2-touchdown favorite in this game. And also it's on ESPN News. A time zone that neither ever play in very often, the central time zone. So 2:30 local kickoff. So besides being a weird setting, I lost my confidence in New Mexico for the most. 85% washed away.
Yeah, I mean, I think this could be a bad matchup for them. I think, you know, they're still good at running the football, but I think they got exposed last week against Boise State. And, you know, Air Force's defense has been playing at a very high rate, especially against the run. You know, they more or less still kind of held Brian Hill in check last week, you know, even though they ended up losing that game. You know, they're still only giving up 2.5 yards per carry. And, you know, while I think that to some extent New Mexico is going to get theirs, I still don't see them being able to make a difference in their passing game against the secondary. I do, however, expect to see Nate Roman connecting on a couple of those big plays we've become accustomed to. Mm-hmm. You know, Jalen Robinette's having another big year by, you know, triple option standards. You know, he's averaging 28 yards a catch almost.
Yeah.
Which is insane. So, I mean, is that just kind of the recipe for success, where both of these teams are able to kind of average 5-6 yards a carry, but Air Force makes the difference in their passing game?
I think it could be, because, well, Air Force, I don't know. I think Air Force will do what they want almost against this defense, because it's so terrible against New Mexico. So honestly, if they wanted to, Nate Romine, they could line up under center and throw 40 times and run 15 times and still run away with this game. I don't think New Mexico has, their defense is that porous that Air Force, who gets those deep passing because off the run, but if they wanted to, I wouldn't be surprised. It'd probably be a closer game, but they could still win if they were to pass 30 plus times.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't really see that happening. I think
it's not, but I'm just saying, trying to have fun with it here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think what's going to have to happen if New Mexico wants to pull an upset, you know, the linebackers have been playing, all things considered, pretty well. Like Dakota Cox is having a pretty decent year. You know, Kimmy Carson here. Is, you know, as far as havoc rate, they're still a top 20 team. It's just that the defensive line, especially for a 3-3-5 defense, has been a complete letdown. And I think if they're going to stop Air Force, it's going to have to be the guys up front, like Nick DiAponso, you know, the guys like Garrett Hughes, who've, you know, they've had moments, but they've basically been exposed more often than not.
Dakota Cox needs more than one tackle in this game as well.
That would probably help, yeah.
And really quick, it looks like I'm at the depth chart. I don't know because we got fooled by Utah State, but Tyrion Gibson listed as a starting tailback, but he had that hamstring injury. Nothing says he's... I have not listened or watched Bob Davies' press conference, but even if he plays, he'll keep it interesting. But like we saw versus Boise State, Tyron Owens, Richard McCorley did fine in his absence.
Yeah.
And also with we know Lamar Jordan is still the quarterback for a few more weeks. If they had Austin Apodaca, I would be saying this game could be close because he's actually shown to be a better thrower this year than last year. Mm-hmm. Partly because when you're the guy this year, you don't have to worry about coming in on third and long when they know you're throwing and this deck stacked against you when it's obvious passing situation. And that's the reason you're brought in over Lamar Jordan last year. And so, but with that, I think 14's a lot, and I think Air Force is also pissed. You lose to Wyoming. You need to wait till the end of the year to know if you can even win the division because that's when they play Boise State. I think what Air Force needs to do, they need to get more involved in the ground game because last week, like I said, when they put Wyoming, like Jacoby Owens, DJ Johnson, they didn't have a ton of carries.
Yeah.
I think that's where they want to get back to. I don't care who it is. I do not want to see Nate Romine be the leading rusher or leading, not necessarily rusher, but the amount of times he rushes. I think that's an issue when he runs that many times and when DJ Johnson, whoever else, Jacoby Owens are running for like maybe 10 times. Yeah. Get those guys the ball, pound this defense early. Then, like you said, they'll go to Robinette over the top. They'll get an early lead and I think they should win comfortably in this game. There's nothing that New Mexico can do for the most part, even if they go for like they ran last week so well with Owens and McCorley, yeah. And even Lamar Jordan had a good rushing game. I don't see them, unless they get some cheap scores or really short fields by Air Force's own mistakes. I don't see them playing, let's just say they even turnover margin, penalties are even, like it's an even game on errors on both sides. I don't see New Mexico winning a balanced game if that's the case. They have to be like plus two and good special teams, those type of things are how they might be able to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think one other thing that Lobos fans can keep an eye on is that, you know, with regards to forced fumbles, Air Force has actually been pretty lucky so far this year. Like they've coughed up the football 10 times, but they've only lost it 3 times. And the biggest culprit of that is Nate Romine himself, who's fumbled 5 times, but he's only lost it once. So, you know, they've shown some ability to kind of get into the backfield at times. So if they could put pressure on Romine, especially when he's dropping back to throw the football, if they can force him to, and like basically if they can force fumbles, basically whatever happens once the football leaves someone's hand is kind of random. That's kind of what all the research says. But if you can take advantage of that skill and force fumbles, then I think that New Mexico, that's kind of their road to an upset. But they've only done it, they've only forced 2 fumbles on the year, so we'll see if they can actually do that.
And also to add on that, I was looking at TFLs. They're at the bottom of the conference, 28 tackles for loss. So they might, it's compared to, let's say, Boise, Colorado State, and Utah State, both have 40 plus.
Yeah, it's going to be rough, I think, for the loss.
So the 14 points, are you taking it or leaving it?
I would take the 14 points, but I think Air Force is probably going to win somewhere between 10 and 13 points.
I think they'll win by more than that.
All right, then.
And one quick note, I'm reading up on the Cotton Bowl. A few reasons. This is considered an Air Force home game. The Academy agreed to play at the Cotton Bowl because part of it was with the State Fair, like we said. New Mexico, the opponent wasn't set. New Mexico wanted to play this game, partly because they recruit Texas and that area. Lobos have 23 players from Texas, 10 from that Dallas Metroplex area. So that's a part of the reason. Like, yeah, we'll play there. So that's I guess that's the best answer we're getting on why it's there.
Yeah. All right, that works.
So next game, we're moving on to, let's get my order. Ooh, we got, oh man. Here's your Saturday how it's planned out. Here's what we got for you. If you're a Fresno fan, bear through Friday night and watch your team. And if you want to watch football on Saturday, you have a pretty big gap after that first game if you're going to take in any of these other Mountain West games. Because, like I said, the first one's a 12:30 Pacific game. Next game, or not until the 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern or later window.
So what are we talking about first?
I guess time order, Colorado State to Boise State.
That's going to be a hard task for the Rams.
And I was correct in our, when I mentioned in our previous or our mid-season show, the line was 29 points just less than 24 hours ago.
Okay.
If you haven't heard, Colin Hill's out for the year with a torn ACL. I predicted the line would move, which is not really not Notre Dame or anything, but increase to 31.5 in favor of Boise State winning at home.
You don't say.
Nope, you don't say.
That seems like a lot. Like, it's not like Colorado State is a team full of stiffs. You know what I mean? I think what it comes down to, obviously, is whether Nick Stevens can show that he can be the same quarterback he was for long stretches of last year. You know, because I didn't get a chance to watch the Rocky Mountain Showdown, but, you know, the box score kind of indicates he was a total disaster.
You're better off. You're better off for not watching that game.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, so he was kind of a total disaster, which was uncharacteristic following what he did last year. But, you know, they still have a decent running game behind him, and I think that that'll help. It's just a matter of, you know, is he going to come to play?
He seems confident because from what I read, he's technically a third-string quarterback when he got first demoted behind Fountain Bada, but he's now obviously the clear number two.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's positive about him where I think they could cover these points. He came in cold versus Colorado State, Utah State game because the injury was just so sudden to Colin Hill. He had to come out. No timeout was taken to let him warm up. He did hand the ball off once or twice, but they had a key 22-yard pass.
Mm-hmm.
To help them get a touchdown at the end there, to the tying touchdown, I might add you. So that it could have been adrenaline. It could have been, oh, we're on a drive. I'm coming in right away. I'm ready to go. But that 21 yards, I think that was more than he had in one of the games he played. I got to check, but I'm probably wrong. Let me look real quick. But that has to give you some confidence. He comes off cold against a decent Utah State defense. There's a deep pass, and they helps him get the win.
Interesting. See, I think what the Rams are going to have to do, because obviously Jeremy McNichols is having a great year. You know, nobody's going to dispute that. But if you look at what they've done as a whole, like if you look at their running game as a whole, it's been kind of pedestrian outside of Jeremy McNichols, has it not?
I would agree. They don't have guys like last year. They don't have the depth.
And so I think if the Rams are going to have a chance, they're going to have to force three and outs early. And I think a lot of that is going to come down to stopping McNichols. Because if you look at what Boise State's done by quarter, as far as, you know, running the football, it's not by much, but the first quarter has been their worst quarter. They've only run for 3.9 yards per carry, which is, you know, pretty average on the whole. On the flip side, Colorado State in the first quarter on run defense has given up 6 yards a carry. And, you know, they're not going to be able to do that and get away with pulling an upset, basically. Like, if Jeremy McNichols looks like he's running wild, that's probably going to set up the play action for Brett Rypien. It's going to open up big plays, and I don't know that the secondary is good enough to really cover that for too long. So I think, like I said, I think it's going to come down to whether or not they can stop McNichols early, force Brett Rypien to make plays.
Part of it with that, I don't know, because the defense, people were very upset at Marty English, as it should have been, the Rams DC. He joked, not joked, but was it 2 weeks ago, I want to say? He's like, we missed at least 20 tackles. And that first half of Utah State game, same thing. They could not tackle anybody. Second half, when they're down 24-10, they actually rebound and make defensive plays. They make stops. And I'm reading a few things here about how they're having a more like a free-form defense or free-range defense that they're installing to basically not do what you want, but a more of an attacking, I want to say.
Yeah.
Just kind of play your area, not necessarily, if I'm reading this correctly, or if I'm interpreting correctly, Basically, it says here, just play football for the most part. So stay in your lane. If you're a DB, guard your guy. If you're a linebacker, watch the tight end or the running play or quarterback eyes to blitz or attack or hold off. But that may work in this game, and that could help them. But even if they play a great defensive game, I don't see – well, let me rephrase that. Brett Rypien hasn't been amazing this year. He's not as good as last year. Last week he was very good, but versus Washington State, who seems to be better than we thought, he did okay. When they played a bad Oregon State team, he played, in my opinion, a crappy second half where I think I've mentioned a million times already, I think their first four drives were nearly every pass on and three and out. Something very, very, very short drives I wanted to just crush the throat of the Beavers. And so it depends what Brett Rypien shows up, but I don't know if that matters too much. He could have a subpar game, and they've proven it. They can win if he has a game where it's not that great. Look back again, that win over the Cougars.
So you think it's going to come down to Boise's secondary shutting down Colorado State's receivers?
I mean,
that's a fair argument, and I think that'll probably be the biggest difference of all because, you know, Nick Stevens can be good, but if he's not great, then they're probably not going to win this game.
No, he has to be great because he's going to have the offense. The Boise defense is very, very good and much better than we thought.
Yeah.
And so they're going to come into this game where they'll have some confidence because they beat Utah State coming from behind. But they're playing this Boise team who's, based off last week, freaking amazing. Overall, they've been pretty good. I don't think they've been I wouldn't call them elite this year so far, but very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think, like I said, Brett Rypien has. I think it comes down to him because McNichols will get his if they want to. The reason he didn't get it versus New Mexico is because they didn't need him to. They gave it to him when they wanted to at the goal line and got the short touchdown runs. And so if Brett Rypien struggles, you give it to McNichols. And even if Rypien struggles, he's still going to have probably two touchdowns in a bad game.
That's fair.
And also, have you seen what uniforms they're wearing for this game?
I have not, no.
They are wearing their 2007 Fiesta Bowl outfit.
It's a pretty good look.
Where they, for those who don't know or don't know college football, or if you don't know this, go read up or check it on YouTube. That's when they beat Oklahoma 43-42, when the Sooners had Adrian Peterson. Boise had the hook and ladder, the Ian Johnson kneel down proposal, and a Statue of Liberty for the win.
All right.
So that's a lot of stuff that happened. So what's your prediction? Are Rams going to cover, or what do you got?
I mean, asking Boise to cover 31 is a lot. You said it was 31, right?
31.5.
31.5. You know what? I'm going to take 31.5, but I expect Boise to win pretty comfortably.
Yeah. Do you have the over-under? I want to see if I can have that really quick. Because if it's 31.5, the over-under has to be, what, 670?
I have no idea what it is off the top of my head. I would expect something probably like 42-21.
I'm trying to see here. I'm sitting over at teamrankings.com or the Pick Center of ESPN. What does it say? Come on. Where are we at? Where are we at? Oh, dang it. Well, I'll just tell you this. Their average score is for team rankings, 44.5 to 16.1. Or number fire, 41.2 to 14.2. Sure. Oh, here it is. Over-under is only 58 points.
Really? Boy, they were expecting a dominant performance, aren't they?
They are. A lot of points for Boise and not many for Colorado State. I can't do it. 31's too. They might win by that much, but the way the Rams played last week, I think they'll show up. And Nick Stevens will be pumped. I know the Rams haven't played well versus Boise historically. And it's too many points to take. I can't comfortably or confidently say that Boise can win by 31.5 points. Will they? Maybe, but I'm never going to predict them to beat a competent team by that many points.
So are you calling for that backdoor cover at a minimum?
Minimum. They're going to win. I think they'll win like 42-21 or something like that.
That's fair. So then we're in the same boat.
There you go. All right, let's take a quick time out so you guys can hear the sultry sounds of maybe Flo from Progressive. But yeah, so we'll be back in about, let's say, 60 seconds this time. All right, next game. We got two more games this evening. Nevada at San Jose State. Do we have to watch this game?
I won't be able to watch this game if it's on CBS Sports Network.
My internet. Oh, it is on CBS Sports Network. Nevada at San Jose State. How many yards do you want to put for James Butler? Can I set the over-under at 175?
You can.
What are you going to take on that?
I would take the slight over.
Slight over? Okay. Yeah. Do you know, have you looked at who's favored in this game?
Oh, man. I looked at it kind of, oh, I wish I could remember what it was. Wasn't it a pick last I checked?
You're close, but it's not a pick at the moment.
Okay, well then I have no idea what it is.
Spartans are a 1.5-point favorite.
Oh, man. What does that say about Brian Polian?
Turn up the heat. He's a nice simmer at the moment, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man. I don't know how... What? We don't need to break this down extensively or go so deep, but... Can you justify or rationalize to the audience how Spartans are a favorite?
Okay.
And you can't say home field advantage as part of it.
No, I won't. Here's what I'll say. Good. For those of you who watched the Fresno State game last week, here's what I can say. Nevada's front four is pretty terrible. And I know that Kenny Potter has been sacked 21 times this year. But, you know, the same way that Chase and Virgil was able to rebound last week and have himself a pretty nice game, all things considered, like he was, you know, he was harassed here and there near the end. And, of course, they didn't complete the comeback in the fourth quarter. But
hand the ball off.
If Kenny Potter's ever going to break out, he's going to have to do it against this front line, because the Wolfpack offensive line should be able to, or rather the Spartans offensive line, as bad as they've been pretty much all year. You know, they should be able to keep him upright against this defensive line. And if they can do that, you know, Tim Crawley's been having a pretty decent year. Like, he's got a 67% catch rate. And Trey Hartley's been the guy that they take shots down the field with. You know, his catch rate's below 50%, but he's still averaging over 17 yards a catch. So if he can get those two guys the ball, I think that sets up the run pretty nicely. And both, you know, Cooper and Zamor Ziegler should be able to find running lanes against this line too.
Let me give you a few more positive things about San Jose State.
Okay.
You said 21 sacks for, is that team total or just on Potter?
Just on Potter.
So remember, he played only four and a half games, because he left the Utah game, missed one game. Seven of those sacks came against that Utah game. So not that we should remove the Utah game entirely, but that skews the number. So if we take out that game, that's 14 sacks allowed in only four games.
Yeah.
Still not great, but trying to give you something here, Spartans fans.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing you can say, like, I know that you and I kind of disagree on this to some extent. I still think the Spartans secondary is pretty good. And I think in this particular matchup, it's a really good matchup against Tyler Stewart, because Tyler Stewart doesn't throw the ball down the field. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked ad nauseum about, you know, big plays off and on with different quarterbacks. Stewart's only averaging 6.5 yards per target or per attempt so far. And he's only got one interception on the year, which is all well and good considering how often he's throwing the ball. You know, one interception in basically 150 pass attempts is pretty good. But this team just isn't built for big plays. And I think that San Jose State is good enough to get after him a little bit. And, you know, guys like Maurice McKnight and, you know, Andre Chatry, if he's back to 100%, they're good enough to make plays and really contest these receiver wide receivers who, you know, I haven't made a secret that I'm not really enamored of any of those guys. So I think that if they can, I don't even think they have to put a lot of pressure on Stewart. I just don't see them making big plays against the secondary.
Here's one thing that's positive. While Stewart's pass rate per yard attempt, terrible, he's only has one interception.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, sorry. I must have been looking something up on there. So that screws over my point. I was going to chat about that for a moment, but he doesn't make mistakes. And so, but I don't think, here's the thing. They don't need, even though it's weird, like they have a lot of receivers that should be good on this team. Who was the, wasn't there a tight end that caught 3 touchdown passes versus Fresno? Wyatt Epps, I want to say. Is that correct?
Wyatt Depps.
Depps. Sorry. Close enough. I should know names. No, I shouldn't. You guys know who I am. but they have, it maybe I'm, you can tell me, you can call me I'm dumb or I'm wrong, but they have decent receiving depth on this Nevada team.
I'm just, I mean, none of them are really explosive targets though. Like if you look at the, you know, if you go to Football Study Hall and you go to Nevada's team profile, like if you look at the yards per target, especially
not safe for work. Is that what you're telling me?
Jericho Richardson's yards per target is less than 5.
Yards per target? Is that like throwing depth, you mean? Or when he,
I'm
or
pretty sure that that's what that means. And Hassan Henderson is under 5 as well. Wyatt Demps is right around 8.5. And, you know, just by comparison, I want to try and look up what it is for San Jose State real quick. Try and find their receivers.
That's terrible. If they're throwing... Because I know in NFL, like I listen to some like fantasy football stuff, and there's a new stat they brought in, or some guy figures it. It's basically yards. Like I think that's what this stat Bill Connolly has, where it's yard depth thrust. Like guy, I think that's what that means, right? Like the depth per reception or per target.
And by comparison, Tim Crawley's averaging 8.2 yards per target. Trey Hartley's at 8.4, and Justin Holmes, who's the other guy who's stepped up for the Spartans this year, is 11.5.
Hmm. Makes sense, because Kenny Potter is a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just not sold on Nevada being able to move the ball consistently against this team. Like, I think that James Butler is going to have himself a very good game. I think what it's going to come down to is whether or not Tyler Stewart can step up, and I have my doubts.
Because if you look at Butler last week, he had, what, 30, a career high 35 carries versus Fresno? 30 plus, I know for sure.
Definitely, yeah.
I'm thinking they'll want to give him that again, because they'll just feed him the ball. I think Stewart will have about 50 on the ground, because he can run a little bit. And with him doing the read option or the triple option, maybe this might be the game where they bring in the the safety to play, because they didn't bust out the triple option versus Fresno, did they? I don't think.
Not that I can recall.
When they put, maybe they'll bring in that safety to play a couple carries. That would be a smart move to do with the way the San Jose State rush defense is so bad. So let me ask you this: who, like, if we go position battles, like running back goes to Nevada, correct?
Yeah.
Quarterback, would you say Kenny Potter?
Yes.
Receiving group,
I would say San Jose State.
Interesting. I think it might be more of a push. I think I would say if we go defense, secondary, obviously San Jose.
I think that,
but both front, sir. Is that going to be the big difference, you think? Because both, neither front four or front seven are very good. Is Ziegler going to have a big game this week against this Nevada front that gives up quite a few yards on the ground?
Maybe. I mean, like I said, I think what it's going to come down to is, you know, whether or not they can hold Tyler Stewart in check.
Will they?
I think they will.
I'm wondering if we're disagreeing on this game. Who are you picking? Are you picking the home team?
I'm taking San Jose State to win and cover.
Well, come on, 1.5. It's okay.
No. I'll take it one step further, though.
Ooh.
I expect them to win by like 2 touchdowns.
You do? Really?
Yeah.
I guess this is the same Nevada team that was trailing at 38-3 against Hawaii.
What about you? What do you got?
Now you're making me question. Now, I go in Nevada's going to win this game. I think they'll do it.
Okay.
Because I was one of the few people who said San Jose State would be pretty crappy this year.
That is true. You did say that.
And they are 1-5, so I'm on track, unfortunately, I guess, to say they're not a good team.
You must be proud of yourself.
I said I'm not, reluctantly. I think this will be a good game, though. I think this will be a close game, competitive game. Even your 2-touchdown decisiveness is still a close game.
I just don't have a good feeling about Nevada at this point.
I get the second half versus Fresno was pretty terrible, I think. You've got to give credit to Fresno for moving the ball and running the ball and moving it downfield to come back. But now I got to say Nevada's going to win and win by 10 points.
All right.
Hop on the Butler train. All right, next game, which for updates, follow Time Warner Oceanic on Twitter.
Yeah.
6 p.m. in Hawaii, I want to say, local time.
You'd be correct.
I am correct. Midnight Eastern. I like how they try to trick you to say it's a Saturday game because they don't want the webpage to say Sunday. 11:59 Eastern, technically. UNLV at Hawaii. However, you saw my note I put out to you that this game, if you're in Las Vegas, you can watch on the local NBC affiliate, which is a plus.
That's always
a big plus, I would say. They secured the rights somehow, so if you're local, you can watch the game. Other people, I'd recommend, finding the Hawaii football audio feed of the radio broadcast, because we're not going to never suggest find the online streaming feed that's not legal with Robert Kekalula. But Bobby Curran's a really good play-by-play guy. He's a really good guy. So if you want to pay attention to this game, check that out. So if you want to stream it, if you can't sleep or something and you're that laid up at night, go for it. But there's no official line on this game, as I can tell at the moment. The big news on this game, which I sent you over right before, UNLV has a little bit of a quarterback carousel going on, I want to say. Quarterback rotation, maybe, is the better term.
You did mention that, yeah. Dalton Snead apparently is going to be splitting snaps with Kurt Palandek.
That seems to be correct. What do you think of that move?
It's interesting. I don't know that I quite understand it. Just because, you know, Snead, of course, had a very good game against Fresno State, I think, all things considered. Yeah, and then having to go from playing Fresno State to playing San Diego State is kind of a huge jump in difficulty. So I don't necessarily hold it against them that his box score numbers weren't all that good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now you go to Hawaii with a chance to really kind of... I mean, it's a chance to jump back into the division race, if we're being honest. They're 1-1. Hawaii's 2-0, and if they beat the Warriors, then they have that tiebreaker ahead of them. And while there's still a long way to go between now and the end of the season, having that win in your pocket is pretty decent, or it would be pretty useful.
Also, bowl game.
Possibly. I mean, I think that's a little far-fetched, personally. I think we talked about that on our mid-season show.
We do, but if they want to, they need to win this game. Both teams, frankly, if they want a bowl game, need to win this game.
I also think it's odd because I think it just makes sense to let him grow with the young guys around him. You know, obviously, they're probably going to lean, as usual, like on Lexington Thomas and Charles Williams, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they lost Darren Woods. They still have Devontae Boyd, though. And I think if you just give them a chance to grow with these other young guys like Mekhi Stevenson, Elijah Trostclair, Jericho Flowers, those kinds of guys, you know, it may not always be pretty, but if you have a solid running game and an offensive line that can keep Snead upright, it doesn't make any sense to give him less reps when they want to win this game, obviously, but there's
of course
more significance than you might have expected coming into the season around this game.
Sure. You glossed over Jericho Flowers. He's moving from defensive back to wide receiver this week.
Yes. Yeah.
So, well, you mentioned he's playing receiving, but I want to let people know he's we've documented at length the depth issue with injuries. So he's moving over as a backup role. So you got to have something there. He's fast, the DB. Hopefully he might not see a ton of carry or attempts or plays actually, but that's just. I want to make sure we mention that to not just say, oh, he's playing, maybe he'll do well. But a few reasons they mentioned here, like we have our, by the time you hear this, we'll have our press conference recap up of the Rebels this week. But part of the reason what Tony Sanchez said is because he doesn't want Dalton Snead to have too much on his plate.
He doesn't want what?
So it's too much on his plate.
Okay.
Sorry. Because like you said, the extreme playing San Diego State to Fresno State, it's a huge difference. And here's exactly what he said. It takes a little off his plate. He's still a freshman, still figuring this thing out. Sand just adds, the Aztecs do a lot of high-pressure type stuff to get him rattled, have him overthink a bit. And so that's why he wants to bring in Palandek. But what he's saying about Palandek, it's not going to be... Sanchez is a smart guy. I think Rebels are on the right track. He's not going to go what Matt Wells did with Trekking Keaton and Kent Myers, where Series A, Series B, A, B, A, B, A, B, the whole game. Mm-hmm. What he's saying here is that he's going to have select... He's still working on the plan, it sounds like, because he says... His quote here, we're debating whether or not to put him in the first series or of the second quarter or put him in the third series. They're going to get opportunities. Dalton will get to start, and at some point, Kurt will get in, for sure. And so it seems like, it doesn't seem like it's fully situational like Palandek did last year. It sounds like he's going to have a couple series assigned to him, which I think is a better move than Dalton Sneed messes up, has an error, bring in Palandek, because that's where you get the issue of being a young guy, confidence-wise, oh, why am I getting pulled because I went three and out for, say, two out of three series? In this case, he knows Palandek coming in second quarter, first series, or third series number eight, or series number three and six, no matter what I do. If it's set in stone that way, Palandek doesn't need to worry if he has a bad series leading up to being pulled, or not pulled, but substituted. He knows it's not going to be he's out because he made an error. And I think that's what they need to do to give him confidence and not, like I said, he's a young guy, to not allow him to overthink, which he did against San Diego State, that he knows he's going to be out no matter what at this time. It's not a performance issue.
See, here's... I guess I can understand that logic. Here's why
I'm not saying it's a good idea, but I think that makes more sense.
Here's one reason why I don't really buy into it. Because to me, it just makes more sense to settle on one guy, to stick with Sneed, and give the running backs like, 50, 60 carries between them. You know, because not only do you have Lexington Thomas and Charles Williams, but, you know, David Green's been a pretty effective short yard back, all things considered. You know, he scored a few, you know, goal line touchdowns. And if you look at Bill Connolly's power success rate, which I'll just explain real quick, just has to do with how successful you are on third or fourth down, 2 yards or less to go. How often do you get a first down or a touchdown? Right now, UNLV is a top 20 team in that regard. And Hawaii on defense is dead last.
Cool.
And so I think if you have a running game that's able to move the chains against this defense, you just lean on that as much as possible. And this offensive line has shown that they know how to create running lanes. So while Hawaii's front seven may get some tackles for loss, I mean, you know, they have, you know, Jelani Tavai, who's having a very nice season. You know, Russell Williams Jr. is having a pretty good season so far. You know, they have 11 and a half tackles for loss between the two of them. But I think that this offensive line is good enough to really step up and punch Hawaii's defensive line in the mouth. And I think if you can control the pace of the game, you know, on the flip side, Hawaii, believe it or not, is one of the more explosive offenses in the country. Like, if you look at Bill Connolly's explosive metric, guess where they rank as far as explosiveness?
Where is that?
And I admit I don't understand the category totally. I don't have a brief way of explaining it, but I encourage Warriors fans especially to look it up. They're fifth.
And so say that category again, explosiveness on what end again, defense?
Because he has his five factors, which he explains over on Football Study Hall, but one of them is explosiveness, and Hawaii is fifth in the country.
Isn't explosiveness, if I'm correct, plays it like over, is it down adjusted explosiveness, or is it just explosiveness?
It's something you're called at? ISO PPP, which I don't know off the top of my head what it's called, but
I have it here. I always forget, like, his stuff. It's, if you understand, it's great, but there's some times where, like, in this scenario, it's like, oh, what is it again? Let's see, explosiveness is ISO PPS, they rank fifth. Let's find out real quick. Let's national average. Hey, 1.28. That's, hey, it's a good, this is not a bad thing to be ranked that high.
I'll translate it. Okay. Hawaii has 21 plays of more than 20 yards through the air, and they have 13 of more than 30 yards. So, and of course they have the three-headed ground game with, you know, Harris and St. Juste and Lakalaka that has been very effective. But I think it's going to be interesting to see just how many of those big plays they're able to get against the secondary, because they're probably going to get pushed by this running game. And, you know, Drew Brown's athletic enough, I think, to make plays down the field and find guys like Marcus Kemp, who's had very quietly a very good year so far. He's averaging 17 yards a catch. And I would not be surprised if, you know, the deciding factor in this game is like a 60 or 70 yard catch and run.
Cool. All right. Here's what explosiveness in simple terms.
Okay.
ISO PPP is the equivalent of points per play average on only successful play. So this doesn't count for negative plays. So I'm assuming plays that go for like incomplete, basically 0 yards or less. Those plays, I assume, are wiped out. So what this does allow, basically, it's like how successful you are. I'll read exactly. I don't want to paraphrase. This allows us to look at offense in two steps. How consistently successful were you? And when you were successful, how potent were you? And so what that means to me, if I'm correct, when Hawaii has positive plays, they're typically good plays.
Yeah.
They just may not have a lot of those plays.
I think we're losing everybody but the nerds like us right now.
Well,
suffice it to say that Wyoming, or not Wyoming, Hawaii has found a way to make big plays consistently, and they've been even better at that since Drew Brown has been the quarterback.
And that's a big deal with him. He's moving the ball, and that's what they needed. And Hawaii's kind of doing the opposite. They're sticking with Drew Brown. Because back to the QB thing really quick, you made a great point. Give the ball to Thomas, give it to Charles Williams. There's no need for UNLV to really throw more than, what, 15 times max? So what the heck do you need Kurt Ballendeck for? He's kind of mobile, but not really. Dalton Sneed's just as mobile, if not more. I don't get it when their game plan's probably not going to throw that much that they need to switch quarterbacks. And so you convinced me of being in more of an odd situation. I like this scenario in play, but I don't know. I found the line of this game. Let's go to that before I just stumble again. Oh man, you're gonna blow your mind. Do you want to take a guess? I'm assuming you know Hawaii's probably favored, right? Because they're at home.
Yeah.
What do you think the line is?
Wasn't it something
in favor of the Warriors?
I thought it was something like 11.5.
You are close. It's 9 at the moment.
Okay. It must have gone down or something like that. Because I remember being surprised by it on Sunday.
When I saw it, I'm over at Vegas Insiders. It opened up as 7. It could have switched around. But here's the weird thing. This makes no sense to me. It opened at 7. It's now at 9. The over-under went from 62 to 54.5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a touchdown drop overall. So what's the factor in this game? Do you think is Hawaii going to get the victory and be 3-0 in league play?
I never thought I would say it, but I think they're going to get the victory and go to 3-0.
Oh, 3-0?
I mean, I think that, you know, all things considered, they are much better on the island than they are on the road. And, you know, especially with a new quarterback that's revitalized this offense, you know, I think that they could possibly be a factor if the defense can keep, you know, whoever's under center for UNLV in check, which I kind of think they can.
Here's the auto point. I think I'm going to agree with you, but here's a couple points with Drew Brown. In two games, he's completed over 75% of his passes. I'm just kind of averaging here. 83% versus Nevada, 15 of 18. 24-33 versus a good San Jose State secondary. He has 500 yards in two games, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and has also rushed for 79 total yards.
That makes sense.
Hawaii's going to win. I'm with you.
Who would have known? What a world.
Yeah. This is not 2005 Hawaii. This is 2016 Hawaii we're talking about. Are you okay? Next step, will they win by 9 points?
Yes.
Interesting.
Honestly,
I wish I could watch this game.
I think it's going to be a blowout, if I'm being honest. I think they could probably win by like 3 touchdowns.
Sorry, did you say 3 touchdowns?
I did say 3 touchdowns.
You know that's 21 points, right?
I know I'm tempting fate, yes.
I'm just saying, you're the math guy, you know, well, not actually the English writing guy, but 21 points, that's just lame joke, but just curious. Okay, let's wrap this up really quick. Why do you think they're going to win by 3 touchdowns? I know you've put out forth a lot of information, the running game, the receivers are good, Drew Brown's playing well. Is it just that, or do you not have any confidence in UNLV because the quarterback situation and the lack of wide receiver depth?
I mean, I think that UNLV will be able to run the ball just fine, but I don't know if the passing game has anything to offer Hawaii. And it's not like the Warriors' secondary is great. Like, they have some nice pieces back there who've had from very nice seasons, like Trayvon Henderson's having a pretty good season. You know, Jamal Mayo's having a very nice year back in the secondary. But I think they're good enough to make plays against this kind of depleted wide receiver core, especially.
They are. 6 interceptions on the year. They're not great in yards allowed, but 6 picks is pretty good. It's about 1 a game. So I agree with you. Hawaii's going to win, but I think UNLV will keep it interesting and keep it close because I think Hawaii will give up yards on the ground. What did they, really quick, what did they give up against Nevada on the ground? Do you have that in front
I
of you?
Do not, but if you want to talk for a minute, I can look it up.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up here, but that could convince me the running game if, because James Butler, I'm a decent fan of him.
So they've given up 5.7 yards carry on the year. A lot of that is skewed, though, by Michigan and Arizona. Against Nevada, they gave up 194 yards, 4.6 yards per carry.
Do you have what Butler did or not?
I do not.
Man, don't worry about it. It's okay. I would say if we're comparing running games, would you say Nevada is better than UNLV running the ball?
I would say they're right about even, I think.
Pretty close. Okay. Yeah, I'm on the Hawaii bandwagon. Hawaii's going to win. What did I say in our mid-season show? Did I say they're going bowling or not? I forget. I know it was just yesterday.
We'll go back and listen to the tape, and we suggest everybody else does too. How about that?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Yeah, if you missed the mid-season show, if you already downloaded it on the podcast feed, you probably have to re-download it or go to Blog Talk Radio because there's a hiccup in the audio. I apologize for that, but Week 7 recap, or excuse me, not yet. No, I'm not in the future. Week 7, I can't speak tonight. Not that that's anything new for most people. Week 7 preview is in the books. Hawaii's going to win. Hawaii might go bowling. We'll see. Go back and listen as I do, because we're busy guys. We don't remember everything we said. And I didn't write it down. Did you write it down, Matt? What we did on the bowl projections? No. So we could lie and say, hey, we picked this and be right.
We could buy it. But business as usual.
Yeah, we're always biased against every school. So check us out, mwcconnection.com. Like I say every time, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher. Plug in the RSS feed to your favorite podcast app. So that's our show for tonight. And enjoy your weekend. You have only 5 games, so sporadically schedule your day. And I will end as I always do and say, yeah, we're biased against your team. What are you going to do?